Happy Wednesday, friends, and welcome to Aquarius Behavior, a book club podcast with Morgan
and Samantha.
Morgan,
what's in your bevy today?
I am caffeinating. I have a little bit of second drink again.
Second drink.
So I've just been sipping on it. There was a can lead before in there.
But now it's like the ice has melted.
Yeah.
It looks suspiciously yellow like Diet Dew. Was there a Diet Dew in there?
Oh, correct.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully it's caffeinating me a little bit.
Well, and I can't help notice that it's also in like a plastic cup, but it is in a commemorative white Christmas plastic cup. And that was the first thing I noticed when I landed at your home today to record, was even though we are on the cusp of the hottest part of the year, it was just refreshing to see, oh, White Christmas. The Chan Hassen Dinner Theaters did that a few years ago.
Yeah.
Pleasant.
Yep. My husband and I do have a small collection of commemorative cups. And it's the best ice water cup. You want a big cup of ice water. This is what we want. And so it's delightful. And it just reminds me of all the fun things that we've done. Early dates.
Oh, yeah.
Family gatherings.
Yeah, the nostalgia.
Celebrations. And next to that, of course, I have my giant water bottle. It's in a Stanley, which my mother calls the Nathan cup.
Why? What is that?
Oh, my gosh. It's so funny.
Yeah? Am I not in the know? Tell me what.
Just, so I left this at her house. Like, I asked for one for Christmas because the features were just...
Correct.
We've talked about it before.
It's
and
the perfect.
There's no shame, okay, in whatever vessel holds your water. Just chill out, everybody.
Chill out and get hydrated, babies.
Yeah, exactly. So I left it at her home one day, and then she called me. She says, hey, you left your Nathan cup here. And I said, what? Your Nathan cup, you know, the one you got for Christmas? And I said, oh, a Stanley? And then we laughed about it. And it was, so that's now what we refer to it as.
It's just your Nathan cup.
Yes. And so every time she sees it now, she looks at me and goes, oh, so you have your Nathan cup today. And then she looks up at me and kind of smirks and giggles to herself.
I love that.
The trait runs in the family. It's the same thing I do. Like, I made a joke and that was funny. We should all laugh.
Collectively now.
Yeah. So it's our little inside joke now.
My intrusive thought is just Chris Lilly yelling Nathan in Angry Boys when yes. I heard that. And Nathan. So I had to shove that away while you were telling me the story, because that is all I think of when I hear Nathan is Chris Lilly, the comedian / actor.
Yes.
Nathan.
Did you know that he has podcasts now?
No, stop it. I did not know that.
I discovered this just recently. He has podcasts. In his different characters.
Oh, shut up.
So Mr. G has his own podcast that just started. Jemay has her own podcast.
Oh my gosh.
So I just want you to know that because I've been secretly listening to those for the past like 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
Because I wasn't sure if they were good or if it was something like I wanted to share with you and Melanie.
This is really
because I was like, is it funny? It's very funny. I want you to know now.
That's so many iconic characters that he has created are his like brainchild babies. And so when you just said he has a podcast, I'm like, oh, wow, I wonder what it's about. Is it just Chris Lilly talking about like his artistic process of coming up with these, you know, characters of all walks of life? And no, Morgan, it's the characters who have the podcast. Oh my gosh. Yes.
So,
yes. Jemay.
As you would probably guess, Jemay has an advice podcast.
Oh.
So she offers her advice to sometimes they're just things that are happening or like topics that she thinks of. Sometimes like people are writing in, quote unquote, to her show.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So that's there. And then we have Mr. G ungagged.
And that's our drama teacher character.
Yep.
And all of these characters also have a very heavy New Zealand or Australian or some kind of like accent, because he is Australian.
He's Australian. Okay. Yep.
Back to Nathan. So Nathan? One of his characters is Nathan. News.
Yeah.
Of hearing. And
so
wow.
That's what's going on.
I'm really happy that. This is the kind of information that I'm really happy that you saved for the Pod Lounge, Morgan. This is the kind of stuff that keeps me alive. Just in general, it's like, oh, well, you know, everything is really weird out there. But you know who has a podcast? It's not just Chris Lilly. It's Jemaine has a podcast.
Jemaine has an advice podcast.
Jemaine has a podcast.
And Mr. G has a podcast, just commentating on his life and
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Chris Lilly character?
Oh, that's a really tough one. That's a really tough one. Oh, my gosh. Because I don't know. Okay, so, like, I have to say, one of my favorite characters is in his newest show, Lunatics, from Netflix.
Yes.
I love the gal, like the hoarder.
I was going to say, she's one of my favorite characters too. What's her name?
She's trying to spite her neighbors all the time. And she has all the tacky things.
Scrunchies on her fence posts.
Yes.
And she has her best friend and they go thrifting. Yes.
Because she was the character in the series for me that really like crushed my heart. In a good way,
like
though,
the best way.
Like how Chris Lilly does.
Yeah.
And so there's always like one or two characters in each series that he does where they have an unexpected, like real emotional turn to their journey. And so you're just like giggling and you're gawking and you're shocked by his comedy. And then all of a sudden you're crying and you're having this real deep emotion. And she did that for me in the Lunatics. And I was kind of, I just wasn't expecting that.
Oh my gosh. Lily, it's just, wow. Wow.
I know. Do you have a favorite?
Well, immediately it was that character. And
you too?
I cannot remember the name. But the other one, and remind me of if it's in Lunatics, but it's where he's the like 12-year-old heir of the grounds of the castle.
Oh my God.
And
he's also in Lunatics.
In Lunatics. Okay. And so, yeah, the whole premise is he goes to England because he is now the heir of a castle. But he has like a potty mouth and he's just like very like yuck, like New Zealander, Australian kind of like in your face, not like posh and English and fabulous at all.
He's a YouTuber.
And so he, the whole time.
Or like or trying to be an influencer or something, right?
Influencer. So he's trying to get all of his videos and he's like filming these videos, making these rap songs. It just is, it's just great writing. And when you get so immersed in the character that you forget that this is a grown ass man who is like, acting.
Yes.
So those are just the two that immediately jumped out. But then the one's name that I remember is Yana because she's the pet psychic.
The pet psychic.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. She was hilarious.
It's just like that is also just like a great story. Great story with her assistant. Her assistant getting married. She's in love with her assistant.
Oh my gosh.
It's just like there's just a lot going on in those. Anyway. Chris Lilly, Nathan, water bottle.
The
Morgan,
Nathan.
We got back there. We got back to your water bottle.
Oh my gosh. We just recorded a whole podcast in itself right there.
Done. We don't even need to talk about Peter Pan.
But this is not a Chris Lilly podcast.
No.
Those are already out there, but like,
oh, that's
cool. We're
going to
listen.
Stop
Fans.
Listening to this.
Big fan.
Look up Jemaine. Shit. Wow.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so what's in your bevy? Let's get back.
Okay, we're back in the Pod Lounge. Everyone is hydrating, and I'm here with my crisp
blackberry lemonade Waterloo. Not sponsored. Mm. Not sponsored. Just a fan. Fan of the Costco three pack.
Love it.
Love it.
Nice hydration over there. Mm.
Wow, let me tell you, it's also been like an overly caffeinated day. And my, I don't know if you can tell, you've been talking about the air quality. The air quality.
Up in Minnesota.
In Minnesota. It's just gravelly.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if bad air quality just makes you feel like more garbage or more dehydrated, but I'm just like, oh, it's just hard to be a human with this body in this air outside. Some, yeah, voices.
I know.
Voices are deep.
And we're like down in like lower Minnesota. So
the lowlands.
We have, it's a like high, bad air quality warning. Like, try not to go outside if you don't have to. But it's so much worse up north, and it's all coming from Canada. So, oh.
Be safe, everyone.
Prayers for everybody.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the second half of Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie?
That is what we should talk about, Morgan. Part of me is just really hesitant, because this is, you know, the last bit of book we're reading before summer movie party starts.
Oh my gosh, is it really?
So yeah, it is.
Get the heck out of here. So like, already?
That's really exciting.
Oh, wow.
We just get to like go for it. So I think part of me is just like, oh my gosh. All right, let's start. Let's talk about Peter Pan.
Okay, Samantha. So this here, right? For people maybe just tuning in.
Oh yeah, what is this?
Well, we are Aquarius Behavior, a book club podcast. Every different sign this year in the astrological calendar, we're reading a new book.
Mm.
We're reading one of the classics from the Victorian era.
Yeah, it's really just ended up in like the 1860s to the early 1900s.
Victorian Edwardian,
yeah,
kind of time. Yeah. Why? Just serendipitous.
Well, we said classics, and it turns out just a lot of the bulk yeah, horror that we're finding out is from mm-hmm, that era.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're hanging out in like Europe and in America this year. Good times. This is our last book before summer movie party. Get out. Thanks for reminding me. Now my brain is like buzzing with this.
We have to start our list. List of movies.
Oh, we have a schedule for mm-hmm, sure. Mm-hmm. And last summer we brought on some guests, which I'm pretty sure we're going to be doing again this year.
Definitely.
We've had requests.
I already had some people like verbalizing to me their opinions about the books we've been reading. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We read chapter 9 through the end of this book, starting with the Neverbird.
That's right. That was the first chapter. I was so ready. It was also a very short chapter.
It was. It was a short chapter. Yeah. What did you think of this second half? Like, overall, and we also listened to this together. For what, 4 chapters, I think? The last 4 chapters, maybe? Right before we podcast. So it's fresh.
It's fresh. It's freshy.
True to form this year, I listened to this entire second half about 2 hours before we podcasted. So it's raw. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's raw.
Mm-hmm. Second half, I had a lot of overall like satisfying feelings reading this book. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you and I,
pardon me,
yeah, no, please stay hydrated, buddy. One of the reoccurring themes that we've talked about in some of our books these past seasons is sometimes there's no big thing at the end, and sometimes like there's a big thing at the end. But in this one, we got like a real fight. Like, we got a little mm-hmm, fight. There was like some consequences. And I wasn't expecting how the book kind of like the note of how the book ended,
mm-hmm,
which was just like, we've been talking. Okay. So like, also we've been talking about not only that theme, but how there's like a bittersweet almost sadness or like tinge of horror to, or melancholy almost, mm-hmm. to the voice in these books. And so I was getting a lot of that too in the last, especially two chapters, as the narrator speaks to us about how each character is literally landing back in the nursery and like how we kind of wrap up their stories. I just had a feeling of sadness that did not hit me as much in what we've read so far, except for Little Women, because, oh, my feelings forever. But like not so much in Alice in Wonderland, not so much mm-hmm. in Through the Looking Glass. Those were more like lovely nostalgia. And we talked about the point of view of the sister seeing her other sister. And then talking about, like, in the future, how they will refer back to the stories of what she experienced in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. But there was a finality and a being cut off from, like, the representation of childhood. Mm-hmm. And, like, the deeper meaning of that in this book. And I really felt it in the written because we've seen the movies. We've seen some movies and we're going to watch them this summer, but I've mm-hmm. never read the book before. And so that yeah. was a lot of my my feelings about the second half of the book. Mm-hmm. Morgan, tell me about your experience with the second half of the book and what your overall chunk was. What is it?
Okay, so this made me very sad. I'm like feeling a little depressed about it.
I'm glad we're in the same headspace.
I like this really did. And I was getting the yuck in the beginning of this book. I'm so happy that I read it, like truly. And I am fascinated by this story. It also gave me the yuck. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's fascinating to me because it's meant to be that way. Like I, as a grown-up reading this, you know, I am, and I've seen this throughout many of the books that we've read this year, because a lot of the books we've read this year are considered like children's books, I say with quotations.
Quote, yeah.
Because they've been pretty dark. but like we grew up watching Disney movies based on these, again, targeted towards children. So
very romanticized, turns out.
Very.
Very romanticized.
And like, ugh. So there were just so many things in the second half of this book where I just was like not having fun for the character anymore. Because again, I think just my perspective, right? I'm a 36-year-old lady. So I also have seen this through Wendy's eyes, which we talked about a lot last time we talked about the book in part one, is that the original title to this book was Peter and Wendy. And although we have a third person narrative, Wendy is a central character. And so like we learn a lot of things through Wendy's perspective. So I look at everything. So we get to Neverland. She's like had this wild adventure. We're not having great feelings now on the way to Neverland and realizing that Peter's not entirely stable and like he's not a good leader, although he wants to be.
There's no plan.
And so things are kind of getting sketchy. So then we get to Neverland, though, and then they just like play house the whole time, which doesn't look fun for me.
It just like was a problematic chapter for a few different reasons.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Like very reinforcing gender roles and also Wendy just being very taken for granted.
Yeah. Mm. It's her job to just take care of everybody and like mend their things. She's basically the indentured servant of the Neverland fort. Mm-hmm. And then the boys are just like playing and having a great time. And I'm like, okay, none of this is fun. Wendy can't be having a great time either. So what the heck here? Mm-hmm. So it was just fascinating to me that I kind of like, I'm reading this and because I'm truly like understanding her perspective. Because at the end, as you mentioned, spoiler, Wendy decides to grow up. And so I think like I started to see that urge for her and how she wasn't bothered anymore.
She outgrew this role.
She did outgrow that and realize that Peter doesn't really care about her. Like, and he can't. Like, it's just the fact that he's incapable of it, which is truly the sad part to me. It's not even that he's trying to be malicious. He's not trying to hurt her. He's not trying to forget her. Like, he genuinely feels sorry, or he's mystified. Like, he cannot understand the concept.
Does not have the capacity.
Yes.
He does not have the capacity mm-hmm. to understand.
No, and he can't empathize mm-hmm. because he's a little boy. And so I just, the ending was sad. And there was, I like the word melancholy, because I've also been trying to like identify it exactly, because I wasn't weeping. There have been parts of books where I have openly cried.
Openly like, weeping on the highway while listening to Little Women.
Yeah, for real. Yes, like that did happen. So it wasn't like that, but it was, I don't know, just for me, this unsettling feeling, which I recognize as an adult of like, oh, I'm not entirely getting what I want and there's a loss there, but also I'm making the choice to move forward. And like, that sucks. That's a really adult thing to do, to let go of something that you want, but you know is not the best for you. And Wendy had a satisfaction. Like, she was truly pleased with her life. And she's like, yep, I'm an old woman now. And I've lived. And she gets to then see her child go, which is also just, you know, a symbolic moment in itself.
That was
of parenthood and love.
Yes,
and
yes.
She's now doing the same thing that her mother did. And it now becomes this generational bond that the Darling women.
The Darling women.
And their ancestors mm-hmm. have with Peter Pan. Kind of fucked up, but also romantic. I don't know.
That's, yeah. We're not here to make decisions, Morgan. We're here to just look at it. We're here to just look at it. Peter Pan.
I don't know, man. But it made me feel stuff. Hey, AbPod listeners. Hope you're feeling groovy, and this episode is bringing a slice of nice to your day. Did you know you could follow AquariusBehavior.pod on Instagram to see weekly episode updates and behind-the-scenes podcast pictures? Yeah, it's true. You can also email the show at AquariusBehavior.pod@gmail.com to share your friendship stories or suggest a segment. Stay hydrated, buddies. Now on with the show. This is for real.
There were a few things, especially in the last chapter of the book, that mm-hmm. caught my attention. One of them, because this entire time, I've been trying to figure out how time is like counted in Neverland, and like, is there an exchange sure. rate or whatever? And so there was just, because I was thinking, like, how long has Wendy been gone? How long has Wendy been gone? And how long is this cycle of time of like, where 1 year they're expecting him for spring cleaning and then he doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Peter Pan stops showing up for their planned date time to, or planned mm-hmm. hang time to like go to Neverland. And so there's right. one part where it's also the fact that like they're going to adopt all of the Lost Boys. Love that.
Oh my gosh, that was so cute. And Mr. Darling was so excited about it. Like truly ecstatic.
Find you a corner.
Oh my God.
Okay, so it says, we are beginning to know Miss Darling by this time, and may be sure that she would upbraid us for depriving the children of their little pleasure. But my dear madam, it is 10 days till Thursday week, so that by telling you what's what, we can save you 10 days of unhappiness. Yes, but at what cost? By depriving the children of 10 minutes of delight? Oh, if you look at it that way, what other way is there in which to look at it? So here's what I'm wondering. Mm. Is because this moment she's saying, you know, the narrator is saying we should tell Mrs. Darling that the children are going to be mm-hmm. home in 10 days. But they're saying, well, we know that she would be like, no, we don't want to have them be home faster. That would be depriving them of 10 minutes. And so if 10 days on planet Earth is 10 minutes in Neverland, that's a creepy, creepy thing to think about with the exchange rate of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't also, I didn't really gather how long they were gone at the end when they were talking about Mrs. Darlene had been sitting in the room. She'd been going there. Mr. Darlene felt so awful that he went and slept out in Nana's doghouse. And he was like, no, I don't even deserve to be in the house anymore. Like, he has a complete breakdown.
He punishes that man. Him. He overpunishes himself to, yes, like, compensate for how bad he feels.
He completely blames himself because he's like, no, if I hadn't played a nasty trick on Nana, and if I hadn't put her out, then she would have been there with the children. Mm-hmm. And so this is all my fault. And he's like, he feels terrible. So he evicts Nana. Is like, no, you need to live in the house and, like, be comfortable in there. I deserve to be out here. Oh, my gosh.
It was just very, very terror-inducing to be thinking about, like, if you're really aware of time and as a mm-hmm. child, like, there's a danger of you missing out on your family's life, your life, the life you could have. So there's definitely, like, some free will in this, and Wendy has a lot of agency to, like, decide her future.
Because
mm-hmm. At one point near the end of the book as well, Peter Pan doesn't even remember who Hook is.
Or Tinkerbell. Oh, that was utterly heartbreaking.
Okay, I have it. I have it, and I'm going to read it because that was the other part where I was like, she had looked forward to thrilling talks with him about old times, but new adventures had crowded the old ones from his mind. Who is Captain Hook? He asked with interest when she spoke of the arch enemy. Don't you remember? She asked, amazed. How you killed him and saved all our lives? I forget them after I kill them, he replied carelessly. When she expressed a doubtful hope that Tinkerbell would be glad to see her, and he said, who's Tinkerbell? Oh, Peter, she said, shocked. But even when she explained, he could not remember. Then right there he wrote, oh my God, Tink! Exclamation mark. Peter says, there are such a lot of them. I expect she is no more. I expect he was right, for fairies don't live long, but they are so little that a short time seems like a good while to them. There were just some, like, banger sentences and, like, encapsulated thought bubbles in these last few paragraphs and pages where I'm like, oh, wow, what a lovely thought about the lifespan of something so small and how it can be. We talked about how Tinkerbell can only feel one emotion at a time,
mm-hmm.
and how she just is a little blip. There are just so many of them.
Right.
Created by baby's first laughs.
It's devastating. And also at the same time, when I think about Peter Pan as an immortal being, okay, like, essentially, if we're kind of comparing this, just kind of, I'm thinking of just, like, stories and literature throughout our history, right? Essentially, Peter Pan is a god. Like, he travels through dimensions. Time is relative to him. He is immortal. Like, so he just is surrounded by all of these mortal creatures that have timelines and are aging. So it's devastating to think that he doesn't remember people or, like, creatures he runs into, because, like, Tinkerbell, Peter Pan was her entire world, you know? For Wendy, for a moment in time, he was the world. But also, that's really sad for Peter. Like, that's devastating that he's going to live forever and he's not, like, everyone will be gone. So it kind of makes me wonder, like, why would he be attached to anybody? Mm-hmm. Like,
attachment has a different meaning when absolutely. You are endless.
Yes. Okay, so, like, let's bring this back to your original question. How much time do you think has passed since this adventure and when Peter finally comes back to Wendy and leaves with her daughter Jane?
Well, Wendy says that she's in her 20s now.
Mm-hmm. So, like, late 20s?
Like, she's in her mid-20s.
Mid-20s?
I feel like Wendy's in her mid-20s when Peter comes back.
Okay.
Like, because I feel like it says in there, she's like, I am a woman. I am a young woman in my 20s.
Oh, my gosh. I might have missed that and just was imagining her, like, a little bit older.
Well, no. Okay. Oh, excuse me. When she comes back after, my apologies. Yeah, she had to tell him.
Because he comes back a couple times.
Yes.
But then the final time is when she has Jane and Jane has grown up with these stories. So do they say like how old? Because I don't even think he mentions how old Jane is.
No, she just says, I'm ever so much more than 20. I grew up long ago. You promised not to. I couldn't help it. I'm a married woman, Peter.
I'm a married woman, Peter.
And the little girl in the bed is my baby. But then Jane is old enough to get up and, like, go play. So, you know, it's like that 6 to 11 age range that we couldn't nail down with Alice.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Where are you developmentally on the scale and how mature are you?
Mm-hmm. I imagined her in my brain as I was thinking about it. Oh, my gosh. Is there a picture in your book? Oh, my gosh. Let's see. Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. How fun.
So in the picture, Wendy looks to be just a woman in her 20s or 30s. And then what looks to be like maybe a 6 to 9 year old child in a nightie.
She's not quite a child, but she's not a teenager. Mm. Like Wendy was the first time she came.
Yeah. So this is a younger experience for her daughter. And at first she doesn't want to let her go. And then she's like, all right, goodbye.
It's just for spring cleaning, she says. Mm-hmm. Just for the spring cleaning.
But just like the terror that I would feel as a parent knowing how time works in Neverland and what the exchange rate is. Because if we're just doing from the clues that we could pick up of 1 minute equals 1 day, that's entirely too many minutes. Like an hour is 60 days. Like 24 hours is 24 times 60.
Right.
And you do the math.
Yeah. It's very creepy.
Yeah. So I don't know how long Mr. Darling slept in that dog cage. but it was also Michael. The other thing that I said near the end of the book that brought me like some like, oh shit, again, it's horror, it's not children's literature book. But Michael says something about like, oh, I did that or I haven't felt that since I killed that guy.
Oh yeah.
And he just like says it like now that we're back, you know, in England in like our timeline, and it's just a very matter of fact thing that like these children witnessed violent brutality. There was a lot of really not cool shit that happened between the people who lived on the island, who were referred to as the Redskins in the book. But we know that is not appropriate now. But that was not cool.
It was never appropriate.
It was never like, appropriate, but
it happened. And
we got to read about it.
This is why we still have problems today.
Yeah.
Blech.
But how it shows up in literature and how it needs like commentary along with it saying, hey, look at how people were talked about and described back in the early 1900s and the connotations that were given, because there were some really interesting, just from like an anthropological, you know, point of view, just really interesting descriptions of like how the culture was of the local tribes people. And the war against them and the pirates, and how the adults were just always perpetually fighting on this island. And so the only way to like survive is to essentially be a lost boy, become a child, live in this, you know, lovely little delightful tree hole in the ground, home under the hill. And, you know, hide from the parents and run away from adulthood.
Right.
And like there's such a horror energy to this, because Michael is just like, yeah, so you know, when I murdered this pirate, It's like that's a very real thing happened in this not real place, but mm-hmm. also it is real. There's a lot of just moral and ethical circles we could talk ourselves into with these.
Yeah. All around, I have romanticized the story of Peter Pan, or I have been blinded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, by my culture to romanticize this book. Creepy. That's my final stamp.
Well,
he's creep.
In literature and like culture, you know, we have artists like Taylor Swift who uses references to Peter Pan, Lost Boys, nostalgia, sitting by an open window, just all of this imagery that we get from these books. But then what we don't get in media is like Peter Pan's first teeth.
Ew, which is also the first thing Wendy notices about him when he returns in her adulthood.
Still has his first teeth.
It's like the thing that clicks and she's like, oh my God, it's Peter. And she feels awkward and like, oh no, I'm too. And she's trying to like make herself small so he doesn't realize that she grew up. And then she realizes his first teeth and that's what clicks, like, oh my God, he's a baby.
He's just still like, doing this thing.
Uh-oh.
She's got a life to live.
She does.
Yeah.
Ain't we all? Man. Mad respect.
Peter Pan, horror.
Absolutely creepy horror book.
There's a lot of implications. The time stuff really messes with me. And that was a lot of my feelings with the second half of the book. Yeah, like Peter, you know, Peter and Hook have their fight. And like there's a good fight scene, which is what I talked about at the beginning. Just like Twilight, we, you know, in the movie, we get a fight scene, which was satisfying to me. But then it was just like when we spend the last few chapters saying goodbye to characters and landing characters and being like, and then Michael became like a banker or whatever. And I'm just like, what did the Lost Boys do? And they're like, oh, see that man over there? He's a judge. That's Toodles or whatever.
Yes.
However that sweet paragraph was. But it's like, so then the narrator is like telling me to like look around at all these adults around me. And it's like, remember? They were children once too, and I want to die a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I am glad we got that chapter because it felt like an epilogue to me, which I love an epilogue. I love knowing just a little snippet about what happened to the characters because I'm always curious and I like to continue character stories in my brain and imagine. So I loved that, and I loved that he rounded it off with, here's where each of the Lost Boys went. Some of them got married. Probably had families of their own.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
Everyone grew up. And like, yeah. There's just a bittersweet, melancholy, nostalgia, vomit inducing. Like, isn't that just like growing up and being an adult too? Is just like looking at childhood and being like, wow, look at what that was and look at all that could have been and what my experience was. And now I adulting.
Yeah.
Growing up. What do I do with my hands?
It's kind of this like growing up stinks era. The last few weeks, like reading this and just looking around at my life and like, oh yeah. All this responsibility.
Like, I'd love to fly off to Neverland, but what are the implications of me leaving my life?
It's not worth it for me.
There's no one to take care of my shit. So I can't go off to Neverland. I have to show up for myself every single day, Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you feel the same way too.
Yeah. Like, we can't. We've forgotten how to fly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here we are. But we're also happy about it.
Because first teeth.
I hate the first teeth.
The first teeth.
It is my nightmare.
I was re-listening to the first part, and it's the wet leaves, the wet juices of the leaves.
Ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want anyone to be described to me as juicy or, like, covered in juices.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
That was just,
No.
How Peter Pan got Peter Panned, and also just do the children know that Tink is dead? Because that was the other thought that I had, because there's a whole thing about Tink and like her, like, what's it called? Like Fran, her line, her merchandise. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Tink's merchandise. And so if we're going off of this idea that fairies only live for a very short time, then like this is a tremendous amount of content that has happened to Tink in a very short time. And now she is no longer alive. And so that is sad and terrifying as well. Don't tell the children.
I just had a question about fairies. Okay, so the concept of fairies, right, in Peter Pan is that a fairy is born every time a baby laughs for the first time. Mm-hmm. But then also a fairy will die every time a child stops believing. So it sounds like, based on that, that there is a fairy to child ratio. And do you think that every child has their own fairy that lives in Neverland that's tied to their life?
They live and die by that child's experience.
Right.
Okay, well, I need to read you something that I also noted is about fairies, too.
Okay.
So you're talking about the child to fairy ratio. Oh, because you see, when a new baby laughs for the first time, a new fairy is born. Hold on. Spontaneous fairy birth. What's that about? Is that some Bella 2-week gestation, all of a sudden fairy birth?
The like, first laugh. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how long it takes for a baby to laugh, like what that milestone is and when.
Like when the baby is born. Right. And then when the baby laughs, the fairy is born. So are you like a fairy mom just waiting for some earthen child to laugh? Okay, I need to read this part, though. Don't get distracted, Samantha. Excuse me. As there are always new babies, there are always new fairies. They live in nests on top of trees, and the mauve ones are boys, and the white ones are girls, and the blue ones are just little sillies who are not sure what they are. And I, my just queer LGBT life, just really loved that, like, these are boys and these are girls, and the little blue ones just aren't sure yet.
Yeah.
And, like, that's fine.
Like, they're just living their lives.
They're just fairies, and they're figuring it out. And I just like that we didn't put, like, a binary on fairy sexuality and gender. So I thought that was beautiful for an early 1900s book.
It was a twist for me in terms of, like, this book seemed to really play towards heteronormative gender roles. And then at the end to kind of get that twist, and it's like, oh, there's a third option for the fairies. Well, I'd love to learn more about that.
Tell me more.
I had no idea. I did think that was cute. I don't know. So this is my whole question of, like, yeah, it seems like there is a fairy for every baby. And then when the babies stop believing, then the fairy dies.
The fairy dies.
So that just gives me the assumption that the fairy's life force is connected to some human child. And then, so that then makes me think, like, well, who the fuck was Tink's human? Like, who is her child? Because I would also then assume that Tinkerbell was Peter's fairy. And so then she will also live forever because he never grows up and stops believing.
But then it notes that no, she dies. So
correct.
Tinkerbell was not Peter's fairy.
Correct. So who's fairy was she? Like, was she one of the Darlene's fairies?
Oh my gosh, was she Wendy's fairy?
Right. Ow. Was she? It would kind of explain why they were both, like, so enamored by Peter. They're so loyal to Peter, but they also have, like, complete opposite personalities, which is kind of interesting.
I like that idea for, like, the fairy that you get is just completely opposite of you. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's a fun time. I'm so hurt. I'm so hurt by Wendy's experience, but, like, she's okay with it. But, like, reading about her experience, I feel sad and also, like, some admiration for her. And then, I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about fairy sexuality. I've just been reading a lot of books about fairies.
Are you rereading ACOTAR?
I mean, you know, we're just dabbling back in my besties reading it. So, like, you know, just when you have fairies on the mind. Yeah, this book, wrapping up my feelings about this book, it hurt my feelings. And I cannot wait to yell about it because we get to watch Hook. We get to watch the animated Disney classic, and we get to watch the theater production from, like, the 60s, where lady plays Peter Pan.
Yes.
So talk about, like,
the just stage recording.
Gender representation and stuff. As a young child, I didn't even know. We can talk about it then. It's just delightful.
I'm so excited. Yay.
Morgan, do you have any other feelings to wrap up about melancholy? The melancholy that is Peter Pan.
That's just what I just need to hit this book. I just want to slap him, but not because he's a baby.
With his first teeth.
His stupid, gross first teeth. Well, should we wrap this one up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Oh, I should say something. Like, usually I'm like, hey, we're coming back next week.
Let's do something next week. Hey. Oh, actually, I had a question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so because we're starting summer movie party, I was wondering if we wanted to go in the opposite order and start with Peter Pan and work our way backwards, do Through the Looking Glass, then Alice in Wonderland, then Little Women.
And then 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
So, like, that we can, you
That's
know.
Wild. What if we just drew names out of a hat?
We could also,
and it was, like, random.
We could also randomly do them, because we don't even know what schedule we're dropping these episodes at during the summer, so you're just going to have to check
And
back.
Do we watch them all in clumps? Because we have, like, multiple Peter Pan books, so it's like, do we watch, or Peter Pan movies, so do we watch a Peter Pan movie, and then Little Women, and then Peter Pan adaption, and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and you know, do we mix it up anyway?
Oh my gosh, okay. I cannot wait to see what future Morgan and Samantha decide what to do. Like, honestly, Morgan, on that note, love and abundance, friends.
Bye. I got a smile, take it.